People in Iran hold rallies to condemn a recent desecrating move by the French magazine Charlie Hebdo. Officials call it the sign of the enemy's desperation. Yemen calls on the international rights organizations to stop Saudi genocide, saying over 2,000 Yemenis have died since a ceasefire with Riyadh came into effect. And supporters of Brazil's far-right ex-president Jair Bolsonaro stormed the National Congress building in protest at President Lula da Silva's inauguration. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to World News. Our top story, Iranian people and officials reacting to French magazines insulting Muslim sanctities and the country's religious and national values. President Ebrahim Raisi has condemned the sacrilege, saying resorting to insults under the pretext of freedom indicates the West's despair and failure in recent riots they fanned in Iran. Also, Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani recommended French authorities follow the basic principles of international law, which is mutual respect and honoring the religious values of other nations. Meanwhile, the Iranian people have rallied in the cities of Tehran and Qom to denounce the move. The demonstrators in front of the French embassy slammed the French government for its double standards in dealing with such insults. The French weekly Charlie Hebdo has published cartoons of Iran's religious and political authorities. Infamous magazine has a record of insulting the Prophet of Islam as well. We asked political commentator Fouad Izadi why Charlie Hebdo easily insults other faiths despite the existence of hate speech laws in France.
In France, we have hate speech laws in the books. And what the French government could do is just easily invoke those laws, prosecute the magazine. That's what they should do. What they do in practice is the French government gives this magazine financial support. They gave the magazine 1 million euros in 2015, and the current French president, Macron, has been supporting the magazine. And this is also not something that's required from the French president. We remember previous French officials that used to criticize the behavior of this magazine. And in fact, the French government has banned the magazine 3 times in its history for violating hate speech laws. So what we see is basically the French engaging in hybrid warfare against Iran using the magazine.
A top Iranian general has hailed the country's retaliatory missile strikes on the U.S. Ain al-Assad airbase in Iraq 3 years ago today. Brigadier General Amir Hatami says the attack shattered U.S. delusions of grandeur in the region and beyond. The military aide to the Iranian leader described the strikes as lightning fast and devastating. Raid was carried out in retaliation for the assassination of Iran's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps unleashed more than a dozen ballistic missiles on the base in western Iraq. It caused significant damage, and the Pentagon said that more than 100 American forces suffered traumatic brain injuries. Iran called it a first slap in the face of the U.S. and vowed harsher revenge in the future. Journalist Sayed Zafar Al-Mahdi told us about the repercussions of the Ain al-Assad missile strike.
What we witnessed this day 3 years ago was truly unprecedented, and sent a strong message that Iran can strike and decimate all U.S. military bases in the region. The message went across very clearly. You know, the barrage of ballistic missiles that pounded the sprawling U.S. military base in Iraq three years ago this day came after prior warnings from Iran. And those warnings allowed the U.S. military personnel to disperse on the base and sent them rushing to bunkers. And that actually prevented major losses. But obviously, it resulted in severe brain injuries to hundreds of US personnel. They almost were killed. Iran could have launched the strike without prior warning, and it could that could have killed hundreds of US military personnel. But this carefully measured response in the form of these series of precision missile strikes on the US base was turned out to be a game changer. You know, it came as a shock to military hawks in Washington, and it made it clear that Iran can do whatever it wants. But as the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said after that act, it was a mere slap on the face of U.S. military-industrial complex. The real revenge is still pending, and that is the complete expulsion, the disgraceful exit of U.S. forces from the region, not only from Iraq, but from all countries in the region.
Yemen's Ministry of Human Rights has called on international organizations to put an end to what it's called the Saudi genocide in the war-ravaged country. In a statement, ministry condemned Saudi atrocities against civilians, saying it is shocked over the silence of international bodies, including the United Nations. The statement said the international community has to launch a probe and hold perpetrators of crimes accountable. It also reminded the world that Saudi attacks in Yemen have claimed over 2,250 lives since the beginning of a truce in April of last year. It further lamented that artillery shells and machine guns are still raining down on the heads of civilians. Now, Saudi Arabia, with its allies, launched a war on Yemen in 2015 to reinstate a Riyadh-friendly regime. Hundreds of thousands of people have been killed, and millions are grappling with hunger due to the war and crippling Saudi blockade on the country. Israel has suspended a VIP pass of Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki that could ease his travel in and around the occupied West Bank. That's in response to Palestinians' bid to involve the International Court of Justice in their conflict with the Israeli regime. Israeli forces confiscated al-Maliki's card while he was entering from Jordan. Israel's new right-wing cabinet has announced a series of measures after the UN General Assembly, responding to a Palestinian appeal, asked the ICJ, that's the International Court of Justice, for an opinion on the legal status of Israel's occupation of Palestine. Regime's measures include using Palestinian money to compensate Israelis killed or injured in Palestinian operations. It's also imposed a moratorium on Palestinian construction. Separately, an Israeli minister who recently stormed into the Al-Aqsa Mosque has directed troops to remove Palestinian flags from public spaces. That's after a long-serving Palestinian prisoner waved a flag while receiving a hero's welcome upon his release. Israel also revoked VIP cards of three senior Palestinian officials for paying a visit to the freed inmate. Washington's animosity toward Tehran continues unabated. In a new move, the U.S. has slapped a new set of sanctions against Iran, accusing the Islamic Republic of sending drones to Russia. The U.S., of course, has a long history of imposing such measures targeting Iranians. But what is the U.S. really seeking by maintaining such a policy?
The United States has yet again imposed a fresh round of sanctions against the Islamic Republic. This time, targeting the country's suppliers of drones, Washington claims Russia has been using in the war in Ukraine. The sanctions targeted six executives and board members of Kos Aviation Industries. The U.S. Department of Treasury said the group, which has been under U.S. sanctions since 2013, was a key Iranian defense manufacturer responsible for designing and producing drones. Washington said the drones have been used to target civilian infrastructure in Ukraine during the conflict with Russia. Among those designated was Sayed Hojatollah Qureshi, Quds Aviation Industries board chairman and senior official in Iran's Ministry of Defense and Armed Forces Logistics. The Treasury said Qureshi had led Iran's military research and development efforts and was responsible for negotiating Iran's agreement with Russia for the supply of the Iranian drones for the war in Ukraine. The Treasury also imposed sanctions on Qasem Damovandian, Quds Aviation Industries managing director and board member. It said he had likely facilitated the group's supply of drones to Iran's military services and the training of Russian personnel on the use of drones. The accusations come as Iranian officials say Ukrainians have so far failed to provide any evidence for their claim that Russia was using Iranian drones in its war on Ukraine. Speaking following a technical meeting between Ukrainian and Iranian experts, Iran's Defense Minister Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Ashtiani said the Ukrainian side had stopped short of presenting any evidence of Russia's use of Iranian drones in its war in Ukraine. Prior to that, Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian had also reacted to the U.S. and other Western countries' allegations, noting that Tehran had provided Moscow with a limited number of drones, but the delivery had taken place months before the war in Ukraine. The sanctions come as the U.S. Treasury says it will continue to use every tool at its disposal to deny Russian President Vladimir Putin the weapons he is using to wage his unprovoked war in Ukraine. The Friday sanctions also targeted the director of Iran's Aerospace Industries Organization, which the Treasury claimed was the key organization responsible for overseeing Iran's ballistic missile programs. The move freezes any U.S. assets of those designated and generally bars Americans from dealing with them. Those engaged in certain transactions with the targeted individuals also risk being hit by sanctions. The United States has previously imposed sanctions on companies and people it accused of producing or transferring Iranian drones that Russia has used to attack infrastructure in Ukraine.
Now, even though Iran provided drones to Russia prior to its military operation in Ukraine, the U.S. and its Western allies continue to supply Kyiv with lethal weapons. U.S. and its allies are now poised to deliver a variety of armored vehicles to the Ukrainians despite warnings from Russia. Yet, Iran is being targeted by sanctions by the West, the U.S. in particular, and the reasons for the double standards are quite clear.
The military-related sanctions on Iran are just a small part of the U.S. so-called maximum pressure campaign against the Islamic Republic. Washington has left no stone unturned in pressuring Tehran to fulfill its demands, given that the so-called maximum pressure policy has so far failed to produce the intended result. It is widely believed that by pressuring the government and subsequently the people of Iran, what the United States is and has been pursuing after 40 years of the Islamic Revolution is seeking regime change. The sanctions against Iran over the supply of drones to Ukraine comes as the West has itself been fanning the flames of the Ukraine war by providing billions of dollars worth of military assistance to Kyiv. That includes the United States, Germany, France, and the UK. The weapons they provide range from Mortar fighting vehicles and Leopard tanks like AMX-10RC armored combat vehicles and Abrams tanks. This is while providing Kyiv with such weaponry could increase the risk of direct confrontation between Moscow and the West. Iran has been under the UN and US sanctions since the 1979 revolution. What comes to the spotlight is the futility of such all-out anti-Tehran measures. Despite 40 years of pressure and sanctions on the Islamic Republic, not only Iran has not stopped, but it has progressed, so the sanctions tactic has lost its effectiveness in a sense. This rather indicates that the United States seems to be escaping the frustration caused by its failure against the Iranian nation's iron will. The resilience of Iran's economy is not the only reason why the unlawful American maximum pressure campaign of sanctions against Tehran has failed. The maximum pressure policy against Iran was initiated by former U.S. President Donald Trump when he unilaterally pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal to strike a better agreement, which he hoped would restrict Iran's ballistic missile program and its influence in West Asia. Eventually, his hopes and aspirations became more and more far-fetched with each passing day. Now the Trump-imposed sanctions regime has been maintained by the Biden administration, although they realize it has been an abject failure. Could this be because they see no alternative course of action? What seems to be of very high significance is the fact that the Biden administration has realized that Trump's so-called maximum pressure campaign not only didn't work, but only helped strengthen the Islamic Republic of Iran in the international arena. Yet Iran stands. How so? Iran's economy and partners are diversified with initiatives to circumvent such U.S. measures.
Now in Brazil, the unrest over recent presidential election enters a new phase, and now supporters of former far-right president Jair Bolsonaro have invaded the Supreme Court and Congress in the capital, Brasilia. An estimated 3,000 people pushed through police barricades and stormed Congress, with some climbing on the roof. They also surrounded the presidential palace. Security forces fired tear gas but failed to disperse protesters who are disputing the October election result. President Luis Ignacio Lula da Silva, who is on an official trip to Sao Paulo, has described as fanatical fascists those who were involved in the invasion.
Like true vandals destroying what they found in front of them. We think there was a lack of security, and I wanted to tell you that all those people who did this will be found and punished. And these people, these vandals, what could we say? Our fanatical Nazis, fanatical fascists did what has never been done in this country.
Lula also declared a federal security intervention while authorizing his government to restore law and order in the capital. The leftist president was sworn in on January 1st. Bolsonaro didn't attend the ceremony and flew to Florida 2 days before the end of his mandate. He has repeatedly questioned the credibility of the country's voting system without providing proof. Scenes in Brasilia on Sunday were reminiscent of the 2021 U.S. Capitol attack by supporters of former President Donald Trump, a staunch Bolsonaro ally. The storming has drawn a chorus of condemnations from world leaders. Several South American countries, as well as the European Council, have denounced the incident. Russia says more than 600 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed in what it calls a retaliatory strike in the eastern Donetsk region.
Over the past 24 hours, Russian reconnaissance assets uncovered and reliably confirmed through several independent channels the temporary deployment points of the Ukrainian armed forces in the city of Kramatorsk. There were over 700 Ukrainian servicemen in dormitory number 28 and over 600 Ukrainian servicemen in dormitory number 47. As a result of a massive missile strike on these temporary deployment sites, over 600 Ukrainian servicemen were killed.
Poroshenko said the bombing was in revenge for the Ukrainian missile strike on New Year's Eve that killed scores of Russian soldiers. No immediate comment on the claim from the Ukrainian side, though, but on Monday, Kiev did attack a temporary deployment point in the town of Makivka in the Russian-controlled part of Donetsk province. Moscow has acknowledged the deaths of 89 of its servicemen. Kiev, however, has put the death toll in the hundreds. That's it for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
The U.S. so-called law enforcement has killed at least 1,176 people, or about 100 people a month last year, making it the deadliest for police violence. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote in this regard, law enforcement officers killed an average of 3 people per day, but faced more violence in the line of duty. Cops in the U.S. killed 1,176 people in 2022, making last year the deadliest on record, according to a nonprofit group that tracks police violence. However, officers faced more attempts on their own lives as crime in some cities soared to new heights. Mapping Police Violence, a project connected to the Black Lives Matter movement, found that police fatally shot, beat, tased, and restrained 31 more people last year than in 2021, when they killed 1,145 people. 2022's total of 1,176 is the highest annual tally since the nonprofit group began tracking such statistics in 2013. There were only 12 days without a single police killing last year. Officers killed an average of more than 3 people every day, the statistics show. 132 of these killings involved victims who hadn't been suspected of a crime, and 98 fatal encounters began as traffic stops. Some 24% of those killed were Black, despite Black people making up only 13% of the U.S. population. The violent crime rate in the U.S. has more than halved since 1993. However, violent offenses rose dramatically in some cities in the aftermath of 2020 Black Lives Matter protests, and officers have argued that liberal criminal justice reforms enacted after the police murder of George Floyd that year are costing them their lives. Also, Guardian reported law enforcement in the U.S. killed at least 1,176 people in 2022, making it the deadliest year on record for police violence in the U.S. since experts first started tracking the killings, and new data analysis has revealed. Police across the U.S. killed an average of more than 3 people a day, or nearly 100 people every month last year, according to Mapping Police Violence. The nonprofit research group maintains a database of reported deaths at the hands of law enforcement, including people fatally shot, beaten, restrained, and tasered. The preliminary 2022 total, a possible undercount as more cases are cataloged, marks 31 additional fatalities than the year before. In 2021, police killed 1,145 people, 1,152 in 2020, 1,097 in 2019, 1,140 in 2018, and 1,089 in 2017. The earliest data goes back to 2013, when advocates began counting these fatal incidents. A database run by the Washington Post, which tracks fatal shootings by police, also shows 2022 as a year with record killings. The data release comes 2 years after the murder of George Floyd sparked national uprisings calling for racial justice. Police accountability and reductions in the funding and the size of police forces, despite the international attention and some local efforts to curb police brutality, there has been an intensifying backlash to criminal justice reform, and the overall number of killings has remained alarmingly high. Bianca Austin, aunt of Breonna Taylor, whose March 2020 killing in Kentucky sparked mass protests, said, "It just never stops. There was a movement, an uproar across the globe, and we're still having more killings? What are we doing wrong? It's so disheartening." While the numbers have crept up, the circumstances that precede the killings have remained consistent. In 2022, 132 killings, 11% were cases in which no offense was alleged. 104 cases, 9% were mental health or welfare checks. 98, 8% involved traffic violations, and 207, 18% involved other allegations of nonviolent offenses. There were also 93 cases, 8% involving claims of a domestic disturbance, and 128, 11% where a person was allegedly seen with a weapon. Only 370, 31% involved a potentially more serious situation with an alleged violent crime. Samuel Seni Gua, a data scientist and policy analyst who founded Mapping Police Violence and provided 2022 data to The Guardian, said, "These are routine police encounters that escalate to a killing. The reduction in the conversation around police violence does not mean that the issue is going away. What's clear is that it's continuing to get worse and that it's deeply systematic. What's more, in 32% of cases last year, the person was fleeing before they were killed, generally running or driving off, cases in which experts say lethal force is unwarranted and also endangers the public. In June, Ohio police officers fired dozens of rounds at Jalen Walker, who was unarmed and fleeing. A month later, an officer in California exited an unarmed car and immediately fired at Robert Adams as he ran in the opposite direction. The racial disparities have also persisted. Black people were 24% of those killed last year, while making up only 13% of the population. From 2013 to 2022, black residents were three times more likely to be killed by U.S. police than white people. The inequality is particularly severe in some cities, including Minneapolis, where police have killed black residents at a rate 28 times higher than white residents, and Chicago, where the rate was 25 times higher, Mapping Police Violence reported. Police ability to be judge, jury, and executioner has been taken to another level. No matter how much we insist that it's wrong, society allows it to take place, said Jacob Blake Sr., whose son was shot by the Kenosha police and left paralyzed in 2020. Blake Sr. and Austin run a group called Families United that assists people whose loved ones have been killed by U.S. police. He also found that there had been a notable uptick in killings by sheriff's departments, which are generally county agencies run by an elected leader. In 2022, sheriffs were involved in 416 killings, higher than the share in 2013, which was 277 cases. It's unclear what's driving that increase, though experts say there had been growing partnerships between sheriffs and other agencies, with deputies executing search warrants or doing chases that can result in death. Sheriff's offices are also particularly politicized during elections, which could contribute to the problem. He said there are campaigns in which there is a race to the bottom to compete to be more tough on crime, and the result is more violent sheriff's departments.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. His really in front of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Islamic Upbringing. It takes courage to grow up and become who you really are. However, this growth and upbringing has a major play by parents. And in this program, we try to guide the parents how to take the proper steps to upbring their children in, under the umbrella of Islam. And the answers to your questions, issues are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified family. Today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Nakavi. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Dear listeners, Professor Nakavi is a researcher in the Hawza Ilmi of Qom and also a faculty member at Al Mustafa University. Very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
We have been talking about teenage and the important things that need to be taken care of. And meanwhile, we have reached a discussion of four main relationships, and we discussed almost three of them, and now is the time to discuss relationship with environment. Now, what do you call environment over here?
Yes, thank you very much. I would like to say that when we are talking about teenagers especially, and generally any human being basically has to interact with the environment in which he lives. What is the environment that we are living in today? It's the physical environment, of course.
Yes.
Though nowadays, another aspect of this physical environment is the virtual reality that is there now today in the form of the internet.
Yes.
That has also become another domain. Otherwise, normally, or in the natural sense, when we talk about the natural environment, we are talking about the basic elements of nature or the basic elements of our environment in which we are living and which we are benefiting from. For example, when we are living on this earth, so we have a relationship with the ground, with the earth,
with the soil.
Or we have a relationship with the atmosphere.
Yeah.
The air, the oxygen, the various gases that exist in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
We breathe and live in this world without which we cannot sustain our lives. Or we are talking about the water in the oceans, in the rivers, in the streams, in the ponds, in the lakes, in the form of rainwater.
Yeah.
In wells. So this is water which we rely upon.
Yes.
Sustain our living. Allah sure. Almighty says that I've created everything living from water.
Yeah.
So it is a very important element of our lives. And then these are the land, the sea, the air, atmosphere. These are non-living things. But then we have the living objects, the animals.
They are the elements necessary for our survival.
Yes. May they be plants or in the form of vegetables and fruits and trees and whatever. And then we have the various animals which we use and employ in our everyday lives. Allah Almighty has created these animals for our well-being.
Yes.
Which he says in mentions in the Quran in various places that I have created these for your sake.
Yes.
You can benefit from them. You eat from them. You drink from them. You drink from their milk. You eat from their meat.
Yes.
You ride upon them.
Yeah. We'll continue talking about the relationship of a teenager with the environment after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. I'm with Professor Nakavi, and we are discussing a teenager's relationship with the environment. Well, before we go deep into the discussion, let me make a short summary of what you said so far, that environment is not just the natural environment we live in. You also considered the virtual environment, the internet world, into the environment where a child, where a teenager has to develop relationships. And how do we manage all those relationships? I'll ask you one by one. But for now, you have been talking about the basic elements of nature, the soil, the water, and plants and animals.
Yes. So, looking at this environment from the perspective of our worldview, how do we find all these things? Where do we place them? Of course, again, if we look at our worldview, it's not, according to our worldview, the natural environment is not the only environment in which we live.
Yeah.
Beyond the natural environment, we have realms of existence which are not material or physical. And we have the realm of the angels.
Yeah.
And we have the realm of the purgatory stage between the angels and this world. So philosophically speaking, in our worldview, there are three levels to our existence. But basically, at this stage, we are just talking about the physical, natural environment.
Okay.
Otherwise, it can extend to beyond that also.
So environment is not just limited to here. It also involves our spiritual parts, like angels, and now then your relationship with them as well.
Of course. And there's a purgatory stage between these two. We won't go into those details now. We're just talking at the moment about the physical, natural environment which we live in and which we are used to and which we deal with. And our worldview says that this is all a part of that beautiful universe that Allah Almighty has created for us. And basically, it is a bounty that he has created. It's something from his providence that he's created all of this for us. And he says that, I have created all of this for you, for mankind.
Yes, for the service of mankind.
I've created mankind for myself, but I've created the whole universe for mankind.
Yes.
So basically, when as a teenager we are growing up, we need to understand and we need to look at this environment from this perspective.
Okay.
It should be, when we talk about spirituality, what do we mean by spirituality? This basic issue is that how can we link this natural...
How can we connect the natural
with the supernatural?
Yeah.
With the supernatural in the sense that something which is beyond this natural environment. And that is the existence of Allah Almighty, the ultimate reality.
Yeah.
So as a teenager, we have to be inculcated with this understanding, and we should develop this understanding in our children.
All right.
And the children should also be aware of the fact that, look, if we are living in this physical world, there's something beyond that.
All right. So what you're trying to say is that if a teen lives in an environment and develops a relationship in an environment, he has to know that he has to reach Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala through all this, whatever the basic elements of nature are there. We'll discuss more on the topic after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "The best among you is he who learns the Quran and teaches it."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Naqavi. Professor Naqavi, you were saying that there are some basic elements of nature which come in the umbrella of environment, like there's soil, there's water, there are plants, there are animals, and there's so much natural in the environment itself. So how does a teenager develop or reach to spirituality through these natural resources around us?
So the first stage is to, as we said, is the awareness that must be created, must be developed, must be nurtured within our children, within our teenagers especially. They should realize that this world, this physical world, this natural world, is not independent of the ultimate reality.
Okay.
And this is the first step, making.
So it does not have its own existence.
Yes.
It's a manifestation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Exactly. The problem is today, what we are faced with, especially in our teenagers, that is, they do not have the awareness of this connection. Of course, it may not even be there in many grown-up people.
Yeah.
Because the proper education has not taken place at the stage where it should have taken place, especially when one is a teenager. And this, especially before he becomes responsible as a baligh, adult person to carry out the duties and responsibilities.
Yeah.
This awareness has to be created. And that is very much important, that in every interaction which he has or she has with others, especially the parents, they should be continuously, look what the Quran is saying. It talks about everything that connects it with God.
Yes.
This is how the Quran does it.
Yeah.
Everything goes back to God.
Yes.
The ultimate reality. So this realization has to be created within ourselves and with our children, that everything that exists here, even my existence as an entity, as a physical entity, is dependent upon God. This is the first thing. Then the second thing is to develop the understanding that all these things which have been created by Allah Almighty, they are manifestations of His various attributes.
All right.
Through them, we have to recognize our Lord and His attributes. The first thing is Him being the ultimate reality, the source of and the origin of all life, of all existence, that He is He is the creator of everything. He is the sustainer of everything. Then He has various attributes.
Many philosophers really put it very beautifully in some analogies, like that of a sea and wave analogy, and a mirror, and a human. Like if a human being is standing in front of so many mirrors, all the mirrors reflect the image of that one particular person. And if this particular being is not there, then there's no existence. So actually, all those reflected images could be considered as humans, or the environment, or the reflected form of the same ultimate existence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So we can actually make our children very beautifully understand the relationship of environment and connect it with spirituality by just giving some analogies as philosophers have.
The Quran very clearly says that wherever you look, whether you look into towards the west, you look towards the east,
you will find yes.
There you will find God.
The face of God, yes.
So, but that does not mean that, when we want to pray towards Qibla, towards Kaaba, no, that's another thing.
All right. So we'll discuss more on the topic in the upcoming sessions, inshallah. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you missed any of our episodes, you can go back to our official website, which is www.parstoday.ir. You can also find us on the social media websites by just searching Call of Islam. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Do you
It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
When the majority of American voters look at the records, performance, and behavioral characteristics of their current and former presidents, they don't want Joe Biden and Donald Trump to run again in the 2024 presidential election. Trump's support for far-right groups in the attack on U.S. Congress on 6th of January 2021 and his misguided policies have decreased his popularity among American voters. On the other hand, Joe Biden's weak economic performance, his low approval rating, advanced age, and the gaffes he has made during the recent 2 years have made the majority of American voters unwilling to see him in the 2024 election. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The website of CNBC has more details. No thanks, that's how majorities of the public responded when the CNBC All-America Economics Survey asked if President Joe Biden or former President Donald Trump should run again for president. The survey found 61% of the American public think Trump should not seek the presidency, compared with 30% who believe he should. And 70% say Joe Biden should not run again for a second term, with just 19% support for a run. Substantial numbers in each politician's own party prefer their names not to be on the ballot, including 37% of Republicans who don't want Trump to run, along with 61% of independents and 88% of Democrats. For Joe Biden, 57% of Democrats say he shouldn't stand for office in 2024, along with 66% of independents and 86% of Republicans. CNBC's Democratic and Republican pollsters both believe Democrats will likely support Joe Biden if he's the nominee, and that Republicans will support Donald Trump. In a primary, each candidate would have a substantial level of support that could allow them to gain their party's nod, especially against a larger field of competitors who would split the vote. Still, both pollsters pointed to the large opposition from within each party and said neither Trump nor Biden is starting off in a strong place. While Donald Trump has announced his running, President Joe Biden has yet to officially do so. The survey found that 47% of those who think that Joe Biden should not run say age is a major reason, including 61% of Democrats who don't want him on the ballot and 66% of seniors. By contrast, just 43% of the 18 to 49 age group cite age as a major reason. Biden turned 80 last month. Biden has other problems other than age. Despite a stronger-than-expected showing by Democrats in the congressional elections and several legislative victories, Joe Biden's overall approval rating slipped to 41% from 46% in the October survey, with his disapproval rating rising to 54% from 50%. The president's economic approval rating slipped to 38% from 40%, and disapproval rose a point to 57%. Just 20% of the American public think that the Biden administration's effort to ease inflation are helping, a 5-point decline from October. 28% believe they're hurting, a 2-point decline, and 49% say they're not making much of a difference, a 7-percentage-point jump. The survey found broadly negative views on the economy and the outlook, with just 14% saying the economy is good or excellent, the lowest level since 2013. The Hill newspaper has also covered the same story and gives us more detail. According to a new opinion poll, majority of Democratic voters say U.S. President Joe Biden should not run again for the White House in 2024. The ABC News Washington Post opinion poll, produced by Langer Research Associates and published recently, found that 56% of Democratic voters opposed Joe Biden's re-election bid, while 9% said they had no opinion. According to the opinion poll, just 35% of Democrats and Democrat-leaning independents want Biden, who was the oldest individual to be inaugurated when he was sworn in January of 2021, to run for a second term in 2024. Joe Biden is telling everyone he plans to run again for re-election in 2024, but most Democrats aren't sure he will follow through on that plan. However, Biden's aides have also stressed the president intends to run again in 2024. When asked about his intentions on CBS's 60 Minutes program recently, Joe Biden said, "It's much too early to make that kind of decision," adding that an official announcement would trigger multiple campaign reporting rules. According to the opinion poll, only 39% of respondents approve of Joe Biden's job performance, compared to 53% who disapprove. Biden's approval rating has remained low for more than a year, with inflation near a 40-year high. Biden has been under attack for his advanced age from Republicans. Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations and Republican Governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley, has even suggested that aged politicians in the American government should undergo a cognitive test. According to another opinion poll, Joe Biden is the least popular U.S. president in decades, with 59% of Americans believing his performance has been poor and 45% strongly disapproving of the Democratic president's leadership in the past 2 years. Joe Biden and his team have been denying official reports indicating that the U.S. economy is in a state of recession. The Washington Post has also covered the same story and gives us more details. U.S. President Joe Biden referred to Cambodia as Colombia at an international summit in Phnom Penh, led by Southeast Asian leaders. This latest gaffe is a further concern that the aged politician is suffering from a cognitive disorder. Joe Biden said recently while meeting his counterparts in the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, in the Cambodian capital, he said, "I look forward to building even stronger progress than we've already made, and I want to thank the Prime Minister of Colombia for his leadership as ASEAN chair and for hosting all of us." Biden, who will be 80 years old next week, was referring to Prime Minister Hun Sen of Cambodia, who is currently chairing the 10-member regional bloc. An American political analyst warned that it is very dangerous that a man with serious disturbances in cognition has his hand on the nuclear button and could turn the world into a radioactive ash heap of history. Referring to the amendment of U.S. Constitution which deals with situations where the president or vice president are unable to fulfill their duties in office, New York-based journalist Don DeBar said, "I think you have to consider seriously having a review under the 25th Amendment of the competence of Joe Biden to continue to hold office." Don DeBar added, "Certainly, this should be the first order of business of the new Congress in the event that steps aren't taken before January by those charged under a law to do so. It's one thing to misspeak on occasion. It's quite another to demonstrate a failing memory and other serious disturbances in cognition of the person with his hand on the nuclear button." Joe Biden's repeated verbal stumbles and tendency to meander off script during live appearances have been seized on by Republicans as proof that he's too old for the White House. Former U.S. President Donald Trump has suggested that Biden cannot pass a cognitive test. The Montreal Cognitive Assessment is aimed at detecting mild cognitive impairments such as dementia. Last year, Joe Biden was filmed snoozing as delegates spoke at the opening of an international conference in Glasgow, Scotland. Despite all of this, the Democratic president said recently he intends to run again for re-election in 2024, with a final decision likely to be made early next year.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.